right, folks, I'm just going to get started. So welcome to the board meeting of August 10th, 2020. This is Alex Johnstone, chair of the board, and just before we start calling the meeting to order, I am going to go through roll call. Do we have Trustee Archer?
Present.
Trustee Bingham?
Present.
Trustee Buck? I believe Trustee
yes.
Buck is going to be, oh, wonderful. Thank you, Trustee Buck. Trustee Danko?
Present.
I believe I heard Trustee Deeth come on the line. Trustee Deeth?
Sorry, present.
Thank you. Trustee Galindo?
Present.
Last.
Trustee Miller? And Trustee Miller might be sending regrets this evening. Trustee Mulholland? Trustee Mulholland? Trustee Mulholland. We'll assume Trustee Mulholland is maybe joining us later. Do we have Trustee Peyton Miller? Do we have Trustee Peyton Miller?
Yes, I'm here.
Wonderful. Do we have Trustee Tutt?
Present.
Thank you. And do we have our brand new student trustees with us this evening? Student trustee Ethan Heslett?
Present.
Wonderful. And do we have student trustee Skylar Zegi? Do we have student trustee Skylar Zegi? And so student trustee Zegi may be joining us later. And do we have student trustee Fatima Zakhar?
Present.
Wonderful.
Thank you,
so for our,
joined.
Oh, welcome, Trustee Buck. To our three student trustees, very special welcome to you. This is a very unusual year. Not how we would normally, I guess, have our first meeting, and we are happy to have you on the call with us. I'm just going to go over a bit of the norms for you, as our other trustees are aware of the process of we've been doing this for a while. But the way that we work is when you're not speaking, we'll ask that you put yourself on mute. And for every item, I will go through a roll call. When I call your name, please respond and whether or not you have a comment. If you do not have a comment on the item, you can say no comment at this time. The reason we do that is sometimes we are on mute and we forget to unmute ourselves, and we want to make sure that that is that's not the issue if we do not hear from you. And normally I will, especially at the beginning of the process, call your name out 2 to 3 times just to ensure you have the opportunity to mute yourself. So with that, to our student trustees, do you have any, I'll ask student trustee Hessler, do you have any questions about the process?
No, seems pretty straightforward. Thank you.
Thank you. And student trustee Zakhar?
Same here, seems pretty good. Thanks.
Thank you. And I'll just double check, do we have student trustee Zegi with us? Not yet, so thank you. So with that, we do have roll call, and we have regrets from trustee Miller and trustee Mulholland are not on the line. So with that, I'll call the meeting to order. And we'll start with the Hamilton-Wentworth District School Board land acknowledgement. The Hamilton-Wentworth District School Board acknowledges our presence on the ancestral Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee Confederacy land as determined by the Dish with One Spoon Treaty. The Dish with One Spoon Wampum Belt represents the treaty relationship between the Haudenosaunee Confederacy and Anishinaabe with respect to sharing the land and resources thereon. The intent of this agreement is for all nations sharing this territory to do so responsibly, respectfully, and sustainably in perpetuity. We respect the long-standing relationships with the local Indigenous communities, the Mississauga of the Credit First Nations, and the Six Nations of the Grand River. And with that, Trustee Officer Heather Miller will now play O Canada. Maria Felix Miller.
Joined.
Okay, so, and I've had a message from Trustee Officer Miller that O Canada will be put into the audio so we can continue. We'll now move along to item three, declarations I'll need the trustee to approve the agenda.
Through the chair, there's no approval of the agenda. It's a special meeting. This is the agenda.
Thank you for clarifying, Trustee Officer Miller. So with that, we'll move on to item three, delegation regarding school reopening, and I will have Trustee Officer Miller read the delegation into the record, as we are unable to host delegations as we are operating remotely at this time.
Thank you, and through the chair, this is item number three. So it's a letter that's addressed to the Board of Trustees, and it starts with, we are writing as concerned parents of children at Earl Kitchener Elementary School in order to express our grave concerns regarding the recently announced Ministry of Education directive for school reopening and the anticipated forthcoming HWDSB guidelines. Our top priority is the health and safety of our children and the children at other schools within the HWDSB, as well as that of teachers, staff, and all of their families. We are committed to working with you to implement measures that will increase safety at EK while ensuring our children's learning experience and socio-emotional well-being are not compromised. We were heartened to learn that HWCDSB is looking into reducing elementary class sizes and anticipate that HWDSB will consider implementing such measures as well. We are additionally heartened by the measures that HWDSB committed to taking through its executive report to board July 27, 2020. However, there are additional crucial measures that HWDSB must take in order to ensure the safe reopening of our school in September 2020. Further, we wish to underscore Sick Kids' joint statement on reopening schools August 5, 2020, which indicated that our guidance statement stressed the critical importance of an appropriate bundle of health and safety measures with emphasis on hand hygiene, cleaning, physical distancing, class sizes, cohorting, masking for older students when distancing is not possible, and improved ventilation in classrooms to mitigate risk for students, teachers, school staff, and families. In light of the above, we require concrete actions from you to make a safe reopening possible. The requested actions. In particular, we are requesting that Trustee Bingham and any other trustee who receives this letter introduce and or amend and vote at upcoming meetings of the HWDSB or its committees for such motions as are required to, one, mandate that no indoor classroom be operated except with 15 or fewer students or such number of students as required to make it practical to maintain a consistent minimum physical distance of 2 meters between people, students and staff in classrooms, where possible floor markings should be provided in hallways and classrooms to facilitate appropriate distancing. Two, mandate that if student numbers in any class exceeds 15 or such number of students as required to make it practical to maintain a consistent minimum physical distance of 2 meters between people, students and staff in an ordinary classroom, that class shall be held either outdoors or in an indoor space sufficiently large and well ventilated to make it practical to maintain a consistent minimum physical distance of 2 meters, such as gymnasiums within the school itself or another facility. Three, allocate such funds as are required to equip outdoor classrooms for all classes that cannot be accommodated indoors in accordance with the above restrictions. 4, mandate that all indoor classrooms or other indoor spaces be used by students shall be adequately ventilated, including at minimum windows that open and appropriate mechanical ventilation, and allocate such funds as required to accomplish this. 5, mandate and allocate such funds as reasonably required to ensure that every classroom and bathroom be equipped with a hand washing station, soap and paper towel, and that alcohol-based sanitizer be readily available to students and teachers throughout the school and in the schoolyard. 6, mandate and allocate such funding as reasonably required to ensure that every bathroom is cleaned no less than 4 times per day. 7, mandate that water bottle filling stations replace water fountains throughout the school. 8, recognizing that HWDSB has committed to allowing students whose parents have opted to enroll them in remote learning are permitted and able to return to in-class learning with 5 days' notice, ensuring that students whose parents initially elect in-class learning are permitted and able to, in return, switch to remote learning on demand. To this end, and to maintain social connections among students, the board shall, wherever practical, permit remote learning students, self-isolating students, or students who, for any other reason, are temporarily uncomfortable attending in person to participate in virtual activities that connect them to the school community. Mandate and 9, mandate and allocate.
Joined.
9, mandate and allocate such funding as is necessary to ensure that every educational assistant, supply teacher, and other person present in HWDSB schools be not specifically named in the directive shall have access to PPE to a standard they are satisfied with. 10, providing that should it not be practical within the remaining time to prepare for safe reopening in accordance with public health guidance and also in accordance with the above criteria, the reopening of HWDSB schools may be delayed to such a date as necessary to make it practical. Separately, we are requesting that Trustee Bingham or other trustees who receive this letter initiate a motion, resolution, amendment, or such other measure to bring about a formal declaration by HWDSB that the amount of funding allocated by the Ministry of Education is inadequate to permit safe resumption of classes, and that safe resumption will require additional funding as outlined by HWDSB. Our reasons for requesting the above measures are articulated in greater detail below. Following evidence-based public health directives, the Ministry of Education guidelines do not align with the current best available scientific evidence and public health directives. Moving between remote and in-learning class learning, we are heartened that HWDSB has committed to allowing children whose parents have opted for remote learning to return to in-class learning within 5 days' notice. Clear and timely communication between school and families. We are requesting that the school consider avenues to quickly disseminate information that is important via Twitter, rapid emails, or robocalls, and to ensure written communications are clear, concise, accessible, and highlight important issues in the subject heading. Implementation of challenging logistics and delayed school reopening. Given the extremely short timelines and extensive planning, procurement, and implementation necessary to ensure schools are as safe as possible when they reopen, we are requesting that HWDSB explore the option of a delayed school reopening by 2 to 3 weeks. We thank you for your hard work and dedication during this extremely stressful and unprecedented time. We know that the only way we can keep our students, staff, and their families safe and their well-being prioritized is by working in partnership to resolve to solve logistical hurdles and think of creative solutions to a safe reopening. This was signed by Allison Nielsen-Jones and Christine Elson, and they've just asked that if there's any questions that I can follow back up with them tomorrow, having read their delegation on their behalf.
Thank you, Trustee Officer Miller. With that, I will turn to the roll call. So for our student trustees, I go through the roll call list and select individuals from the roster to move and second a motion unless they otherwise indicate that they do not want to. It does not mean, when a name is called, it does not mean that they necessarily support the motion. It just allows a motion to go on to the table. So with that, I'm going to call on Trustee Archer, seconded by Trustee Bingham, on a motion to receive and file. And I will also now open up for questions, and I'll go through the roster now. And to our student trustees, if at any time you do have questions, you are welcome to either wait till I get to you, or you can simply ask a point of order or point of clarification, and I can provide assistance in that matter. So we'll start with the beginning of our roster. Trustee Archer, do you have any questions?
No questions at this time. Thank you.
Thank you. Trustee Bingham.
No questions at this time. Thank you.
Trustee Buck.
Just a comment. A big thank you to the Earl Kitchener folks for that very comprehensive letter, touching on a lot of things there, but good food for thought in a lot of places, but no questions at this time.
Thank you. Trustee Danko.
Thank you, through the chair. I know typically this is when we ask questions for clarification, and I do want to echo Trustee Buck's thank you to the delegators for the comprehensive report and the and linking it to data that's available to us. Also, I just wanted to say thanks to parents and community members who have emailed or called to express similar concerns for a safe return to school. And so I think there's two things that I wanted to sort of ask about and mention. In their delegation, they talk about recommendations for class sizes to be capped at 15 students, and I was curious where that stated. I wasn't able to find it anywhere in the July 29th report from 6Kids, although on page 10 of the report it states several jurisdictions have reopened schools with maximum class sizes ranging from 10 to 15. It wasn't actually stated that they should be capped anywhere. The other question that I had, it was a bit about the data that they looked to. It was the American Pediatric Association data that looked at 6 feet being optimal for physical distancing, but I know the SickKids authors agreed that 1 meter would be acceptable, particularly if masks are being worn. So I just was curious if there was something that I was missing, and if they wanted to respond after the fact, that would be fantastic. The other pieces that I just wanted to mention, I believe in our last meeting, we established a number of things that we will be doing that align with the suggestions from the delegation, and that includes hand wash stations, ensuring there are bodice filling stations, floor marks to support physical distancing, providing PPE. And I do have questions for follow-up for staff on ventilation, switching to remote learning, bathroom cleaning, and distancing, but I'll save those questions for following our board report today. So I just wanted to acknowledge that I appreciate these suggestions and something I think we've committed to and others we will be talking about later today.
Thank you, Trustee Danko, and Trustee Miller will certainly – or sorry – Trustee Officer Miller will certainly connect with our delegations. And by the way, this should be a motion to receive the delegation. Receive and file is for when we receive a written delegation. So with that, thank you, Trustee Danko. Moving through the list, we have Trustee Deep.
Thank you. Just one question. So this is sort of, I mean, it's great, and again, thank you for this comprehensive email. I'm just wondering if there's going to be a comprehensive answer or response sent back to the delegation.
Um, So I guess, so in terms of a response, I'll turn to, and I'll just remind folks, if you're not on mute, please do mute yourself. With that, I'll turn to Trustee Officer Miller with regards to the response, I believe, would be more in the line of questions. Officer Miller?
Through the chair, that's correct. Typically, when a delegation comes in and does their oral delegation face-to-face, there is no additional response back to the delegates. Because there are some questions, normally if you were face-to-face, you would have asked those questions and they would have answered them, and then we would have thanked them for coming in and sharing their information. When I get the, I'm going to send the questions out to the delegates either tonight or first thing tomorrow morning, and then when we get those answers, I'll funnel them back through trustees, but I'll also include them in the minutes of this meeting so that the public is also aware that the questions were asked and answered back by the delegate.
Okay, I appreciate that because these are, you know, sorry, yeah, I appreciate that because these are some of the questions I'm getting from other parents, and so it would be great to have, I like the way that it's been laid out and very comprehensive, so I think it would be great to have this answered question by question so people can easily see how we are addressing each one of these. So thank you for that.
And so I'll continue through the list. Trustee Galindo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I echo Trustee Butts and Trustee Danko's comments. I don't have any questions at this time.
And I heard Trustee Miller join us on the line. Trustee Miller, do you have any comments or questions?
Hi, thank you. My apologies for being a few minutes late. I do want to say thank you to the Earl Kitchener community for putting this together. I think it's really important to highlight just the level of concern that is out in our communities right now, both at our staff and educator level, but also, you know, parents and students themselves. So I don't have any specific questions for this delegation, but I very much respect the community bring it forward to us in a formal way so that we can really make a note of it in our meetings, because I know all of our, you know, myself and various other, all of our trustees at the table are reading all these emails and having these conversations in private, but it's nice when a community can do it in a formal way. So thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Miller. And just to clarify for Trustee Deese's earlier question, Trustee Officer Miller will be posting only the answers to the trustee questions. So I just want to make sure that was understood or clear. Moving along, I also heard Trustee Maholland on the line. Trustee Maholland, do you have any questions?
No questions.
Thank you. Trustee Pagan Miller.
Yeah, I just wanted to thank all the parents and the various stakeholders who contacted me with some of their concerns. I just think it's great to hear the input from other people besides what we're dealing with and besides the government. So thank you very much, and beyond that, no comments.
Thank you. Trustee Tutt.
Sorry, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just make it really brief. I appreciate the folks who put together the letter. It's super comprehensive and well laid out, and just echoing what Trustee Deeks had said. And that's it by way of my comments with the letter. Thank you.
Thank you. Student Trustee Hessler.
Thank you. No comments or questions.
Thank you. And I have not heard Student Trustee Ziggy, so moving along to Student Trustee Zakhar.
Thank you. No comment at this time.
Thank you. And I'll just conclude by echoing all of the comments from our from trustees. This was a very detailed, well thought out letter, and we sincerely appreciate all the work that went into this delegation, but also to echo Trustee Maria Felix Miller's comments that we also sincerely appreciate the many, the great many letters and phone calls that we have received over the last while. That is informs our decision making, and we truly appreciate it. So with that, on the motion to receive the delegation, moved by Trustee Archer, seconded by Trustee Bingham, to the student trustees, we're going to have a negative vote. So when I ask, is there anyone voting against, if I hear silence, then the vote passes. Or if I hear someone indicating that they will be voting against it, then we will note that. Or if the vote appears to be split, we then go through a full roll call. So on the vote here, do we have any trustees voting against the motion to receive the delegation? Hearing none, the motion passes unanimously, and we will now turn to the next item on our agenda, item number 4, and I will turn to Director Figueredo to bring forward the school reopening update number 3. Thank you.
So thank you to the chair. Thank you, Alex. First, I just want to begin on behalf of all of the exec council to welcome our student trustees. Two of the three who are present today, and I look forward to meeting them again face-to-face. So welcome. So what trustees see in front of them is an updated report, update number 3, on behalf of the work done by exec council and so many of our managers and ad hoc committees and principals who are helping us lead this work. When we were in front of trustees 2 weeks ago, We now have further clarity from the ministry. July 30th, the ministry did release an updated guidance document and provided clarity in terms of how reopening will occur in the province of Ontario, elementary being full return to conventional across the entire province with choice for parents to choose remote learning. So as Peter has always outlined, it's scenario A. And then clearly secondary schools, 24 districts, and we are one of them, that will be opening up in scenario B, adaptive model. So this evening, what Peter will be highlighting through the report and saving more time for trustee questions is the key areas that we've had before, highlighting some of the new areas where we've received further clarity from the ministry. And including safety protocols, also further clarity and about the model in elementary, with clarity around what the remote option will look like now that we've have obtained full clarity of how the ministry has defined that choice of parents who are choosing for full remote, and finalizing our secondary adaptive model as we have seeked further clarification for the second meeting from the ministry and further meetings with our public health and continuous conversations with our coterminous board as well. And lastly, there's two things, highlighting the updated on our financial situation. Associate Director Zucker will be providing an update of where we're at and what new information has come from the ministry regarding B memos in terms of what new funding has been provided. And then lastly, clearly some next steps that are going to begin as of tomorrow around clear communications, including pre-registration that needs to begin next week. So we have clarity of parent choices, but we need to provide them clarity of the models that we're providing so they know what they're choosing to potentially come back to in the physical space or in the remote space. So I'm going to pass it over to Associate Director Peter Sovereign to walk us through this, and then we'll spend more time on questions from trustees, and then we'll go through Peter through those questions, and then he will delegate them and direct them to appropriate staff or myself as well if necessary. So, Peter, I will pass it to you at this time.
Great, thank you, and good evening through the chair. As the directors indicated, this is our third update, and what I hope to do is be brief, and I'm anticipating brief will be around 20 minutes or so, I hope, and walk you through the report. Again, I'll make reference to the pages, and I'll just highlight sections that have the salient points, and then, of course, if there's questions, we'll refer back to the appropriate sections in the report. So I'll actually just begin by acknowledging, as the director has already done, all of the tremendous work that's gone into the planning leading up to what is in update number 3. As we have been indicating throughout the spring, the work did begin in early May and has not stopped. In fact, it has intensified throughout the entire summer as more information has been available in order to put these plans together. And I want to acknowledge the work of all members of the Executive Council leading, in many cases, multiple ad hoc committees comprised of our leaders across the system, managers, senior managers, principals, vice principals, as well as our union partners. Our union presidents have been present for a number of meetings and in several cases participating directly in ad hoc committees, providing really valuable insights into these plans. So I do want to take the time to acknowledge all of them. And, of course, the many parents and students that we've heard from either through trustees or directly in terms of their concerns, but also suggestions. And so thank you. Without question, this has been, in my experience, if not the most, certainly one of the most challenging experiences in terms of not only the school closure, but then the reopening of once again reinventing how we are going to provide a high quality education for our students under these parameters. I'll just remind trustees that we're guided in our work here by five principles that we keep coming back to in terms of a structure, and that is safety for all, minimizing the disruption to regular school day routines as much as we can, the ease of transition between the three scenarios that the Ministry of Education put before us back on June the 19th, honoring our collective agreements and the terms and conditions of all of our employee groups, and, of course, fiscal responsibility. And the reason I always begin with these five guiding principles is that each one of the decisions that has been made, even in this update, since the last time we were before trustees, there's often a give and take. And while it may work in one area, it borrows from another. And so grounding ourselves back in these five guiding principles has been extremely helpful. On page 4-1 of the report, under background, there is a link to the July 30th Minister of Education announcement and further direction around the reopening of schools. There is a link there for you, and you'll have to link a few times to get to the revised guide for reopening of Ontario schools. But what I will do in a moment is I'll take you through some of the more salient points of that that have guided our work since the last update. Just a reminder again that the previous update on July the 27th outlines the various components of our reopening plan that we presented to the Ministry of Education on that same day in the morning of July the 27th. And this update just follows the same format. So before you is our adjusted plan based on the revised guide for reopening provided by the Ministry on July the 30th. And at the bottom of page 4-1, just to highlight again what the director has said, that all elementary schools, kindergarten to grade 8 across Ontario will open in the conventional mode, or what we've been describing as scenario A, secondary schools and designated boards, and that includes our board as well as 23 others, will be opening in an adaptive mode, or what we've been calling scenario B. And the other very significant aspect of the revised guide for reopening was in terms of masking, and the requirement will be that while indoors at school, all students in grades 4 to 12 will be required to wear a non-medical grade mask that also includes on school buses or any form of board-provided transportation. In addition, all staff will be required to wear medical grade masks and face shields, in addition to what had already been indicated, where certain designated staff will be required to wear additional personal protective or PPE when working in close proximity with students. There are many other aspects to the revised guide of reopening that are embedded in our update, but those were really the main highlights of the reopening document from the Ministry of Education. So if you turn to page 4-2, I will walk trustees through each one of our sections and again just bring you to some of the more salient points. A reminder under enhanced public health measures that our enhanced public health measures apply to both elementary and secondary. They apply to a conventional reopening and an adaptive reopening. In the case of an adaptive reopening, there are other aspects that are highlighted, but all of the enhanced public measures are in place throughout both elementary and secondary. And again, this has been done in very close collaboration with the advice of Hamilton Public Health Services. And it is a, as it's indicated at the top of the report, a layered approach with multiple measures in order to reduce the risk of COVID-19 spread. Any one of these taken in isolation isn't sufficient, but it is really that aspect of layering them together that provides the overall enhanced public health measures. In terms of cleaning, the only point that I will make in terms of cleaning is that there is a fairly substantive cleaning procedure that is part of one of the appendices for your information. But in addition, and as will be described later on by Associate Director Zucker, the Ministry has provided additional funding specifically for the hiring of additional caretaking staff, and we will be taking advantage of those additional funds to hire more caretakers. In Section B, under enhanced public health measures, physical adaptation, previously in the first update on July the 13th, we had provided illustrations of both an elementary classroom and a secondary classroom in an adaptive mode, the way the desks would be situated. Now that we have been directed to open in conventional mode, the physical space within the classroom will not be that you would have seen in the previous example. However, it is worth noting that classrooms have been decluttered and all possible maximum space has been realized so that even in a conventional mode in elementary, that we are maximizing as much physical space as possible. in the event that a classroom still remains quite constrained in terms of the number of students that are in that class, we are still exploring the options of utilizing other larger parts of the school, such as learning commons and gymnasiums, as classroom space. For secondary schools, you will refer back to the examples provided in the July 13th report to see some examples of classrooms where in an adaptive mode or scenario B, desks are spaced approximately 2 meters apart in keeping with having approximately 15 students and a teacher in a class. Section C is new in this update in light of the direction provided from the July 30th guidelines from the Ministry of Education. This section describes in more detail masking, again, the non-medical masks worn by students in grades 4 to 12. They may wear their own masks, but masks will be provided to all students. As is noted in here, from the guidelines, students in kindergarten to grade 3 will be encouraged to wear masks, but will not be required to wear masks. And again, this applies to indoor spaces as well as to school buses. In this section, we do describe a little bit about the need to have exceptions made and some exception criteria. That is being finalized currently and will be consistent in terms of the criteria across the board, but will be administered on a school-by-school basis. And as well, there are links in this section to assist parents, caregivers, guardians for the wearing of masks by students, and these are links from the city and the healthcare providers as well. In terms of staff, medical masks and eye protection or face shields that will be provided for all staff, and they will be required to be worn throughout the day. And again, there will be reasonable exceptions for medical conditions that will be provided, as we would for any type of an accommodation. Both the masks and the PPE are being sourced by the Ontario government. And under the supply section, we'll refer to that a little bit more, but we are placing our orders through a centralized system and being provided with an adequate supply for distribution to all of our schools. At the bottom of that section under masks, it's just worth noting that all staff accessing a school that would not normally be a staff member at this school, such as itinerant staff, other service providers, other board staff, will also be required to wear a medical mask as well as eyewear. In terms of visitors, and we'll describe this a little bit more later, we have highlighted in previous reports that the expectation is that we will be limiting quite significantly the number of individuals other than the assigned staff and students to a school. But in the event that a visitor, such as a parent, would come to the school and require access to the school, they would be required to have a mask, a disposable grade mask will be provided to them, and they will also be required to complete the screening process. Moving on to page 4-3, hand hygiene. What we'll highlight here, as we've gone into this quite extensively in the past, is that in addition to those classrooms where we do have sinks and we will be providing soap, to begin the school year, we are going to, in addition, provide alcohol-based hand sanitizer in those classrooms, and we will monitor whether or not the sinks and the hand washing is sufficient, or we will be leaving the alcohol-based hand sanitizer in those classrooms. As well to note here that students may bring their own personal hand sanitizer, but it will be restricted to a 60-milliliter bottle or less, and this is in keeping with the local fire code. Section E on cohorting, what is an update in this section is simply that for elementary schools, as we are returning in a conventional delivery mode, the cohort will be the size of the class, whatever the size of the class may be, that will be the cohort associated with that class, and the expectation is that students will remain with that single cohort throughout the day as much as possible, that if there are multiple staff working with the students, multiple teachers working with the students, that they would come to the students in their cohort rather than the cohort traveling in across the school. And we talked about this in previous reports as well. For secondary schools, because we are in adaptive delivery or scenario B, the cohorts are being finalized currently, and they are being coordinated with transportation and through our IIT division to, as best as possible, align all individuals who reside in the same household to be in the same cohort. Even though our elementary are returning in conventional mode, we are going through the process of aligning families with their cohorts into A and B, both elementary and secondary. Section S on ventilation, just by way of update, is that the work continues with our third-party consultants and reviewing all of the board's HVAC systems. I'm just going to pause here just for a moment, Madam Chair. I'm getting a lot of feedback, so I'm wondering if there's an opportunity to go on mute.
Yep. Just to remind everyone, if you're not on mute, please do so.
Thank you. That's very helpful. So Section G is on signage, in the past, we have provided examples of signs. In this report, we just provide some additional samples and thank our communications and community relations department for all of their work in terms of the signage. So in Appendix D, you'll see some additional examples of signs that are being provided. Signage is not only signage that is provided on the walls, but also on the floors, and we've extended this to the outside as well. Section H, access to school sites, just to emphasize once again here that we will be, as per the revised guidelines provided by the Ministry of Education, significantly limiting or even prohibiting visitors to schools, and that would include parents. Of course, we know that we do need to have opportunities and times for parents to come into the school, and in order to do so, we would have to require them masking and screening. And we do have, in order to support our students, several health professionals, social service professionals, other paraprofessionals coming into our schools, and we're working together with those agencies to ensure that screening processes are in place and that masking is also going to be in place. Section I around screening, the only update here is that we have completed our work with Hamilton Public Health, and in Appendix E, you will see the expectations for screening for students and the attestation process. The attestation process will begin as of August the 17th, so in 1 week's time, through our parent portal, which we'll describe a bit more later on. As well, if there is a challenge with accessing the parent portal prior to the start of the school year, once our office assistants have returned to work, we will be reaching out to those families that haven't completed the attestation and offering any support that they may need to complete it. What is important to note in this section, once again, is that a student will not be permitted to attend school in person unless the attestation is completed. The attestation, again, has two components. The first is that a parent has read and understood and has agreed to abide by the steps listed in terms of the screening, and that it will be done on a daily basis. And the second part is that should any of the elements within the screening warrant a parent to notify the school that they will that they understand that they will do so immediately. This is a really important, a very important part of our layered approach to our enhanced public health measures, and starting this week, through our communications department, again, we will be launching a significant communication to families and communities to ensure that they understand the importance of doing the screening attestation. We've noted that it starts August the 17th, and we haven't set a firm end date, simply because the end date is a student is not able to attend in person until the attestation is done. So we'll open it on the 17th, and we will leave it open. Obviously, the sooner that it's completed, the better in terms of record keeping at the school level. Section J, outbreak protocol. The update here is simply that we continue to work really closely with the Ministry of Health, Ministry of Education, Hamilton Public Health Services, not only the coterminous board, but all the boards within the area to come up with a common approach in terms of an outbreak protocol. The elements are listed there, and we provide trustees with a further update upon completion of the outbreak protocol prior to the start of the school year. We will also make sure that all families and staff are aware of the process through a broader communication to all of them. Section K, I'm now on page 4-5 in Section K. Just by way of an update, the supplies, it's just noted here that, again, the supplies, particularly the new supplies that we've noted here in terms of masks, they are being procured through the Ministry of Government and Community Services, and that the required quantities are being made available to our board, and we have them being distributed to all of the schools. Section L, just a reminder that we do continue to work with very closely with Hamilton Health Public Health Services. And really, again, can't thank them enough, and want to once again acknowledge their very collaborative and highly responsive nature. So many of the components of the work that we're undertaking require either a timely response or a discussion on a matter, and they have always been readily available. So, again, a very big thank you to them. And as well, just noted here, the McMaster Children's Hospital has also met with members of our senior team, including the director, and looking for ways for our organizations to work even more closely together in terms of supporting all of our students and families. Section 2, supports for students. I will just highlight a couple of things here and then let trustees find the further details in the report. But public health nurses was an announcement made by the Minister of Education in terms of providing funds to phase in the hiring of public health nurses. More information is to come on that. Student mental health and well-being, we have received additional funds as well for that, and that'll be highlighted in the section on financial implications. And I just wanted to highlight for trustees under Section C in this 4-5, summer learning and supports. We've provided a number of updates leading up to the summer learning opportunities, and I just wanted to share with trustees that in Appendix F, you'll find a summary of the many programs and supports, and that we've reached or will reach by the end of the summer approximately 6,000 HWDSB students, and whether that's in credit courses, whether that's in mental health and well-being supports, whether it's supports for our racialized and indigenous children and youth. So in addition to the school closure work and in the preparation for the reopening work, just wanted to highlight a lot of the work that's gone into and the advantages that have been taken by so many of our students and families over the summer in terms of closing some of those gaps, but also some of the readiness in terms of a return to school. Section 3 on page 4-6, support for staff. Again, just to highlight here the ongoing work that has gone in to providing supports for staff in terms of readiness for the reentry in the fall. And highlighted in here, you will see a number of supports for staff around equity, around mental health and well-being. Blended learning and the various tools that we have, and as well as specialized services. So thank you so much to all of our teams for continuing to do this work over the summer, and for all of the staff that has been engaging in these sessions over both July and August. Section C just touches upon the fact that our program division, together with our specialized services, is preparing a very, very comprehensive guide outlining some of the key strategies and resources as we move into this new area of teaching and learning within the context of a reopening under COVID-19. A lot of support there, and a very significant resource. Section D on page 4-7, just staying connected with our system leaders. We know how vitally important that is, whether it's our principals, vice principals, or senior managers, managers, supervisors, providing them with the resources and support they need to work with all of their staff. So starting this week, we will be providing regular information sessions for them on the reopening plans, including the training that they will require again to support their teams with enhanced public health measures. Staying on 4-7, engagement and communication, just by way of update, that the parent portal will be ready this week. It will link a number of different aspects that parents have been used to going to our website for, and most importantly, in terms of the reopening, it will be the place where we'll be asking parents to come to for the attestation for the screening, and then, as I will describe in a moment, for our elementary schools in terms of the pre-registration for voluntary remote learning. The last paragraph in Section 4 under Engagement and Communications, we've talked about this before. We've put it in our reports, but it's worth repeating again that providing as much detailed and transparent information as possible, we know, is vital. We hope that we've been continuing to do that through these reports, through our regular director emails to all staff, and our chair and director updates to families on a biweekly basis. Starting this week, those will be weekly updates, and as information becomes known and is critical, if it needs to occur outside of that cycle, it will. So our commitment remains to communicate as soon as we have the information available to us in a way that we know we are able to communicate. So Section 5 under elementary schools, the key components under this section, now that we have received the direction from the ministry that we will be reopening in a conventional mode or a scenario A, is that within those guidelines and through our follow-up meeting with Ministry of Education representatives on August the 4th, we will need to make a shift in what we previously had proposed for our elementary schools. And the shift is as follows. The ministry guidelines and our follow-up reinforce the fact that they are very clear that we are to ask parents if they wish to have their child learn remotely, so not attend in person, and for those students that we have a separate class with a separate teacher deliver their programming within a 300-minute instructional day. That is a shift from what we had described in previous reports where we were maintaining our organizations as they were. A student assigned to a class, if they chose to learn remotely, would still engage with their peers in that class and with the teacher in that class, albeit on a far more limited basis, and we'd be doing it remotely. So the shift here will require two very important changes. The first change will be that we will require to have a reorganization of classes in each school prior to the start of the school year. We will do that once we've learned how many students will be choosing learning remotely rather than attending in person. So in order to do that, the second significant shift, change, I should say, from previous updates, is that we will be asking all elementary school parents, guardians, caregivers, between the window of August the 17th and August the 21st to utilize our parent portal and indicate whether they are selecting remote learning only. Now, the other very significant change that we need to make in order for this to occur is that previously we had indicated if a parent had chosen remote learning only with 5 days notice we would be able to accommodate them back in a classroom. That was based on a model where students were assigned to their in-person classroom, whether they wanted to learn remotely or in person, and it remained as a classroom unit. With this new direction from the ministry, we will need to establish a completely separate classroom with a separate teacher for students that are learning remotely, and in doing so, require the reorganization in order to meet both collective agreements and ministry requirements in terms of class cap sizes and average class sizes.